So good morning. Welcome to the second. This is the second Sunday of Lent. So let's just get rolling. If you were here last week, this will be a little bit of review. But for those of you that weren't here last week, I just want to catch you up to speed on where we are in Lent and then maybe check in a little bit about last week. Because I've talked to a couple of you just throughout the morning about how your week went. So last week we started talking about this bike that's not my bike, but I said my bike has looked like that before. And we talked about what you don't need in this moment is a new bike, and you don't need new tires, and you don't need new stuff. You have everything you need to have a good mountain bike in this moment, right? You just need to lose some things. You need to lose a lot of mud and a lot of dirt, and it just needs cleaned up. And we started talking about this idea, and you can listen to the podcast or watch the video from last week if you want to get more, but this quote from this blogger who said, maybe the journey isn't so much about becoming anything. Maybe it's about unbecoming everything that isn't really you so you can be who you were meant to be in the first place. And so this Lenten series, we're talking about this idea of letting go, that the spiritual journey is always one of letting go of things that aren't useful to us anymore. I talked about last week that when I was little, I thought that I needed a pacifier for my dear survival in life. And at some point around 7 or 8 years old, I realized I don't need a pacifier anymore. I don't need that. And the same thing is true in all of our development. Like we just get to a spot where we say, I don't need that thing. And that's the spiritual journey. It's always one of recognizing I don't need this either. And so it's always unbecoming. I like that idea of unbecoming. One of my favorite writers is a guy named David Benner, and he says it this way: transformation always involves a continuing series of surrenders of the smaller selves to which we attach ourselves as we become our larger and most authentic self. You can read it again slower, right? A lot of selves in there. But the idea is that we're always letting go of our smaller self so that we can become something more. And so that's what we're doing this Lenten series, is we are together letting go. And so we're naming the things that we're letting go of. And this actually worked out better than I thought it would last week. We'll do this again this week and every week during Lent, but we're going to invite you to let some things go this week. And later in the service, we'll let you come up and pin them to the wall, and we'll just keep pinning them to the wall. But so last week we talked about letting go of media, letting go of distraction. And so I know many of you chose last week to give up media in various forms. And so I just want to give a space for just a minute to anybody that might want to share. How did your last week go? What did you learn? How did you fail? How did you succeed in that? What was your journey? Yes. I was going to share that same experience. Is one of the things we did as a family is at least five of us gave up Clash Royale for the week. Some of you, that means nothing, but for us, it does. Everybody but Jennifer, it matters. And so I found myself, like, I'd sit down at home when I had a minute, and I'd open my iPad, and then just like, whoa, what am I doing? Like, and recognizing how I mindlessly go to that, and I also did Facebook last week, how I mindlessly just, and then when you're not, then like, I have 3 minutes here. What am I going to do with it? And I feel like this antsiness in me that I have to fill my 3 minutes instead of just being okay to just like, it's okay. I don't have to be doing all the time. I don't have to be entertained constantly. That's a challenge. It's good. Anybody else? No, I said Monday to Saturday. I said Monday to Saturday, and so we're going to switch the... And here's the thing I want to say about that, too, is if you want to continue in what you did this week, by all means, continue in it. It's great. If it was life-giving for you, why would you go back? The invitation is to keep going, or if you don't want to keep going, don't. And we're going to ask you to do something else. And I'm going to tell you later in the service why I'm going to keep going on Facebook, because it directly relates to this week. So this week, we're going to talk about... Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, failure's a big deal. Like, can we just say failure is part of the spiritual journey? I was listening to something yesterday talking about... I was listening to a podcast, and it was talking about creativity. And he was talking about... Oh, I know. It was Pete Holmes talking to... Jim Adkins, the lead singer for Jimmy Eat World. And he said, the road to a good song is paved with lots of bad songs, right? He said, really the hurdle is writing bad songs. He's like, I think everybody should go out and write some bad songs, because it's only when you write some bad songs that you'll eventually write something good. And so he was just like, that's just part of it. It's failure's always part of it. And so... that's part of the spiritual journey too. And I think sometimes in church, we only talk about the success. And I'm thankful that you said that, because the reality is that all of us fail all the time. And so I think the major task is just to come back And that's actually going to be our passage this morning. Oh, yes, this is going to tie in really nicely to the passage when we get there. Is the journey is always coming back. And I want to talk about that more. So turn to Isaiah chapter 30. Let's do that. So this week, we're going to talk about letting go of the rat race. And we're going to get there through Isaiah chapter 30. I think this is the second time in my life that I've taught on Isaiah. It's not usually where I go. If you're a biblical scholar, Isaiah is like the crown jewel of the Hebrew scriptures. People love it for the poetry and the beauty and the imagery and all that stuff. It's 60-some chapters. 66? Is that right? Let's just say it is. Is it? Okay. It's long. It's hard reading. But there's also some beauty in it. So I'm going to read this morning. Actually, I'm going to put it on the screen. You have it in your Bibles in front of you in the NIV. I'm going to put it on the screen in the message. So let's just work through this together. We're going to work through it in three chunks here, three different movements of this text, just these couple verses. So let me read it in the message, and you all can follow along in the NIV or follow along the screen. God the Master, the Holy One of Israel, has this solemn counsel. Your salvation requires you to turn back to me and stop your silly efforts to save yourselves. Your strength will come from settling down in complete dependence on me, the very thing you've been unwilling to do. Your strength will come from settling down in complete dependence on me, the very thing you've been unwilling to do. The NIV here says, your strength will come in quietness and trust. Is that the words? Right? Let's unpack that together. What do you hear there? What do you see? What resonates in that? Be still and know that I'm God. There's this invitation into stillness. What else? Right. This is the invitation. So the invitation here is really clear, right? The invitation, I put the stool here for a reason today, not just hold my coffee cup. The invitation, I think, this is how I picture this passage right here, is God says, you want strength? Right here. You don't have to go out and perform. You don't have to do feats of strength. You don't have to do whatever you think you have to do. You don't have to impress me. You don't have to somehow win my favor. If you want to be strong, sit here. Just be with me. Have you ever been with somebody where maybe you really want to be with a person? You go to somebody's house, let's say, and you really want to spend like real time with them. Hope we have a good conversation. Hope we laugh. Hope we share something significant. And they're so busy serving the dinner, cleaning up the dinner, making sure everybody's drinks are full, watching the kids. They're so busy that you never actually get to sit down and have that moment. Like, boy, I was kind of in your presence. I was at your house and somehow I missed you because you kept yourself so busy running around. And what this text says, the invitation in this text is right here. You don't have to do anything. Just sit here with me and that's enough. That sounds like too good to be true for many of us. I've shared before, like my temperament and my personality is I'm always trying to earn. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm always trying to earn affection, always. And so to believe, I've told Jennifer, like to believe that she really is just happy when I'm laying in bed beside her, that's enough for her. Just me being there is enough. Oh man, that's a gift. That's hard to believe sometimes because I think, well, you know, I need to build another house to impress her, right? Like I think big. I'm kind of Italian and romantic that way, right? So big things right here, okay? So that's the foundation to this. By the way, these are the easiest verses in the whole thing. So I've heard these verses for years. Whenever you do any kind of contemplative thing or formation community, I think in our formation community somewhere we have this verse, in quietness and trust will be your strength. I mean, that's just great to put. And I've read those verses for years. But I have to tell you, it was about a month or two ago, I was reading those verses and I kept reading and it got even better and more fun. So let's keep going. So this transition here, what he says is right here, come sit with me, but you're unwilling to do this. And then let's go to the next part. You've said, nothing doing. We'll rush off on horseback. You'll rush off all right, just not far enough. You've said, we'll ride off on fast horses. Do you think your pursuers ride old nags? Think again. 1,000 of you will scatter before one attacker. The idea here is that they're poor, they're in captivity, their attackers are strong, have big horses and strong weapons. So think again. 1,000 of you will scatter before one attacker. Before 5, you'll all run off. There'll be nothing left of you. A flagpole on a hill with no flag. That's like just a sad image, right? Just a flagpole. Wah, wah. A signpost on the roadside with a sign torn off. Just a pole. So here's the image, and I really love this. Let me go back to this part. The invitation is this, right? It would be like me saying to you, hey, I want to get to know you. Come sit down right here. And you saying, but I can run fast. Okay, that's not what's happening here. I invited you to get to know me right here. I invited this. And you're trying to impress me with the things that you're doing. And I love how the text spells this out like, huh, I've got a fast horse. So what's your fast horse? We've all got fast horses, right? We've all got those things where the invitation is really simple, really straightforward. I'm gonna keep doing this all morning, right? So all day long, you're just gonna hear this. The invitation right here. And we say, but I can do this thing. It's like Jennifer saying, hey, just come to bed. Lay with me in bed. Watch TV together. And I say, but I'll make you a souffle. Says no husband really ever, except this dork. It's laughable when we talk about relationship and somebody invites us into this, and then we start talking about all the things we're going to do and perform for them. And yet, isn't that the very thing we do all the time? And I love how this text calls out exactly the way we actually behave. Because it's one thing to say, in quietness and trust is your strength, and we all go, ooh, religious platitude, yes. But Isaiah says, that's the invitation. But in actuality, you don't ever do that. You hear the invitation, and then you come up with schemes of your own that describe back to God, no, this is how we're going to do it. God says, come sit with me, and we say, I'll join the music team. I'll play some music for you. That's fine. I wasn't asking for that. I was asking for you to come sit. And so what happens is we find in our lives that we get really busy doing things, right? And I love the imagery here then of your attackers will catch up to you. They'll overcome you. We say sometimes when people are moving out of a relationship or out of a job or onto a new place, like, be careful what you're running away from because you just took who you are with you. And the problems that you face back here are the problems, if you don't deal with them, are the problems you're going to face there because they're going to come with you. And I picture them as like, remember the ball and the stick, the ball and the paddle thing? Like you can bat it away, but it just comes back after you. So think about this passage, like the things that we do to try to impress God or try to keep ourselves busy for God, and we don't do the quietness and rest thing. All those things, think of those as like the ball. Like we bat those away and we say, but I've got a fast horse. And those things always, always catch up to us, and we always find the emptiness of those things. Your attackers ride faster horses. They will overtake you every time. The thing that you do to get away from this space, every time it ends up empty. And we know that. And we say that times. We say things like, that thing won't actually make me happy. Eating this whole pie tonight won't actually make me happy. And we still do it. Chasing money. I've got to work so many more hours to make so much more money. Chase it. We know to say the thing, that doesn't make me happy. This makes me happy. But we still do it. That's why I wanted to use the term rat race. We're going to come back around to the idea of rat race. By definition is the things that we keep doing. We get on the hamster wheel and keep running and running and running. And God's saying, get off the hamster wheel. And then this is the best part. So here's what happens in our lives. Now, maybe I'll describe some of us, right? So the invitation here, and then we run. We do our thing, we run our program, whatever it is that's important to us, whatever it is that makes us feel good, and then we get to the point of empty. And I love what the passage says next about where God is in that. So it says, a signpost, a pole, but God's not finished. He's waiting around to be gracious to you. He's gathering strength to show mercy to you. God takes the time to do everything right, everything. Those who wait around for him are the lucky ones. So here's the image, right? So God says, right here. And I say, but I've got this program. I've got a fast horse. And when I get empty over here, God says, right here. And then I say, oh, but I've got another idea. I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to impress, and I'm going to earn this, and I'm going to be happy. So I dash off over here. And then when I finally get to the end of it, and I go, this is empty, I find right here, where's God? Right here. Wherever I went, he's waiting. He's waiting around to be gracious to us. So it's always about returning, right? I don't have to get back to somewhere. I don't have to like figure it out and fix me. I believe deeply that all I have to do in that moment is just give up, to let go of what I'm doing and sit down and say, okay, in quietness and trust, that's my strength. When I'm connected to God, when I'm connected to the way, I said, was it last week we were talking about sin as all the ways that we go against how we were created to be? That really sin is all the things that keeps us from being more human? And that as I grow in connection to God, I become more aware of those things and I become more present to here? I find my strength right here. And then we beat ourselves up sometimes, I think, by the failure thing, right? Like, oh, I'm doing it all wrong, and I screwed this up, and I've gotten so far from God. And the text is so beautiful to me because then it says, yeah, and right at that spot, God's waiting to be gracious to you. And then kind of the thing, he turns back and says, the lucky ones are the ones who sat here the whole time. The lucky ones are the ones that didn't run off there and run off there and run off that way. But the whole time, they just kept sitting here and kept staying. I was thinking through this as we started preparing this a couple months ago about this idea of rat race, and I was thinking about my life. I think it was 2 weeks ago, Jennifer and I, it was a Monday afternoon, and I was texting her like, what's happening Wednesday night? And I think her text literally is like, can we get through Monday night? And then once we figure out Monday night, let's talk about Tuesday. And I think that particular Monday night, I can't remember what all was going on, but I think we had three kids in three different locations and just the normal rat race for parents of four kids, right? And we're doing that. That's life for many of us. I was looking up definition. Urban Dictionary is always a good source for nothing. Rat race is a term used to describe a frustrating, hard-to-break financial lifestyle. It is a lifestyle that is lived by countless people, oblivious to the very nature of it, to a degree that even when called upon, vehemently deny it. This one's actually better. To summarize the rat race, it involves subjecting oneself to time-consuming jobs, saddling oneself with heavy mortgages, rents, bills, children, liabilities, forcing the individual to continue busting his or her butt at the same job. The illusion that working at the same job would be better bars off alternatives. Boy, this is the temptation for all of us all of the time, right? In quietness and trust. But man, there's so many other things to be doing. There's so many things to be about. So much energy spent doing lots of other things. So I this morning want to ask you, just what's your rat race? What is your fast horse? What's the thing that stops you from just sitting and being with God? This is one of those places where collaboration is beautiful. So this whole series has been highly collaborative. I've worked with the formation team, and Brian Holmes has worked with me a lot. And so Becky does all of our graphics, and I sent her the master teaching list over Lent. Like, here's the topics each week. And this is the week, by the way, that you pointed out to me later. You're like, everything that you had in your letting go part was totally set as a 3 on the Enneagram. And so she pushed me to go a little farther. So I'm going to talk about Enneagram for a couple minutes. And if you're sick of hearing about Enneagram here, you can blame Becky. If you really like what I say, you're welcome. Wasn't that nice? If you really like this, she's the one who pushed me to lean into Enneagram a little bit in this, because I think we all play different games. We all have different kinds of horses. So I want to spend a couple minutes here because I think it'll be useful this morning and helpful. So for those of you that don't know the Enneagram, let me give you the 2 seconds. And I think a lot of us here, it's become pretty familiar language here at the church, and we've done a couple workshops and those kinds of things, a Sunday school class last fall. But the Enneagram is roughly a personality tool, 9 different lenses, 9 different perspectives on life and how we see things that we can break down into 3, what we call triads of 3 numbers, 3 basic subdivisions. That big pie at the top, we call the gut triad. The bottom right, we call the heart triad. The bottom left, we call the head triad. And I think what I often say when I teach people this is that what I've come to learn, and especially as Jennifer and I have talked, the phrase we use is every day Jennifer and I play very different games. We're playing a very different game all the time. I'm in the heart triad in the bottom right. I'll talk about that in a minute. She's in the head triad in the left. And because of that, the way we see things, talk about things, experience things, process things, we are just not even talking. It's like a soccer player and a basketball player talking strategy. It makes no sense when they start talking strategy to each other because they're different games. They have different strategies. Yes, they both have a ball and a net, right? But after that, pretty much everything's different. And so what I think in this is as we start thinking about what's my fast horse in this passage, it really will be driven by our way of seeing the world and the game that we're playing in our heads. So let's unpack this for just a couple minutes, and I'll start down here in the heart because it's mine and I can talk pretty raw in raw ways about this and pick on myself. So in the heart triad, the thing that we're often wrestling with, the game that we're playing every day is how do I win your affection? How do I win your affection? We are very tuned in to you. Every Sunday morning, I don't know if you know this or not, I am reading your faces constantly. And those of you that aren't really into what I'm saying, I stopped looking at you 15 minutes ago. You think I'm kidding, right? If I'm looking at you, it's because you're smiling and you're giving me good positive feedback. I'm super tuned in, right? That's just, in this triad, I am always tuned in. I'm always reading, hey, is this person into me? How do I? So as we think about this triad, let me just give you real quick Enneagram stuff. So the 2s, which are the first number in the triad, 2s say, I'm going to earn your affection by serving you. I'm going to do things for you. 3s, that's me. We say, I'm going to earn your affection by impressing you. I'm going to do stuff and you're just going to be impressed by me. And I know you like me because you're impressed by me. 4s say, I'm going to win your affection by just being really honest and raw and vulnerable with you. And if you reject me, so what? I didn't need you anyway, right? Like there's this, but all of us share this thing. Like when I am churning in my head on something, it is almost always 90% of the time it's relational for me. It's a very relational way of seeing the world. I'm always thinking about this person said that thing in a meeting. What are they trying to say? Boy, I saw the look they gave me. I saw the thing. That person was really quiet. What does that mean? I'm always wrestling with that. So in that game that I'm playing of this affection thing, my rat race, my fast horse, especially as a 3, has to do with like performance. I use that a lot. Did you hear me saying that a lot as I was talking? It's about like God says here, and I say, but I can do this. I almost, most of my Christian life up to very recent has been spent when I feel close or connected to God, I start doing. I just start, and everybody in this triad, we're all kind of geared towards action. We just kind of, especially the 2s and 3s, we're very geared towards our response. If we feel something, we feel it, we respond with doing. We go. And so for those of us in that triad, the things we might have to let go of this morning, our fast horses, might have to do with what am I going to let go of? What am I going to not do? And I'm going to unpack that a little bit when we come back around. When we move over to the head triad's always asking a different question. They're not asking, how do I win your affection? They're asking, how do I deal with anxiety? The world is a dark, scary place. How do I deal with my fears? 5s say, well, I can study more, and if I can figure it out I'll deal with my fears. Sixes say, I have all these fears, and I'm just going to keep working them until I figure out a solution, and it often doesn't come. And sevens say, I'm going to do everything in my power and run any program I have to run to avoid that feeling of anxiety. I do not want to feel that, so I will do whatever I have to do to keep anxiety just kind of away. So do you hear how that's a very different game? So for Jennifer and I am always tuned into, like, I'm telling her, like, relationally, da, 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 and she's like, I didn't even think about that. And she says, well, I'm afraid, blah, 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 and I'm like, people are afraid of those kinds of things? I didn't know you could. There was one just yesterday, you were like, here's what I'm thinking, da, 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 and I was like, I didn't even know people got afraid about that. I didn't know people thought twice about it. But that's the game she's playing. Now, here's the danger, just real quick. The danger in marriage is when I start, like, putting her down, which I've spent much of our marriage doing at times because of her wrestling with anxiety, or her putting me down because I get so wrapped up in people. And instead, what we're learning in marriage is to temper that and to help each other in that, that she helps me get to my head. She helps me get to think this through. Don't just react. Don't just go off your feelings. Think about it. And I say to her, you know, like, people. And so she's not that heartless, but you know what I'm saying? Like, what's good is instead of, like, fighting over our difference there, we're learning to grow into it and say both of us bring something. The different games we play are good. It gives us flexibility. We learn from each other in the different games we play. So we'll come back around. So when we start talking about what do we let go of, probably if you kind of land in this space, it's going to be about letting go of some kind of ways that you deal with anxiety. I'll unpack that in just a minute. Let me get to the last one. The last game is in the gut triad, and the game here is how do I control my environment? What's funny is as I've talked to several people in this triad, actually lots, but we those of us down here, I always say, like, I think when I think relationally about things, I always assume I'm the problem. In any, like, given situation, I often assume that I'm the problem. I'm internal. The anxiety ones, they know that they're in their head. In the gut triad, you know where the problem is? It's us. The problem is external. The problem is out here. There's environmental. I want to take care of it. So eights respond to that environment by saying, how do I dominate it, manage it, direct it? How do I manipulate the environment? They're strong leaders, right? Nines say, I control that by shutting it down. I'm gonna avoid it. I'm gonna keep it all at bay. But in that way, I am in control of my world because I shut down all the drama. I shut down everything out there that's stressing me out. They're in control. And the ones say, I'm gonna control it by perfecting it. If I can just take my environment and perfect it, then everything will be good. Does that make sense? All right. So the struggle here when we start talking about rat race is issues of control. Again, very different conversation than what I'm having about, do you like me? I sound so pathetic when I say that. Like, every time, by the way, I teach this stuff, I feel so much like, oh, my type is the worst. And I know other people feel that same thing too. So here's why I wanted you to hear all that. That's my really, like, down and dirty, quick, fast introduction to the Enneagram for those of you that haven't gone any deeper than that. Here's why. Because when it comes to this fast horses thing, the invitation's here. Our fast horse, I think is almost always rooted in the games that we're playing in our head. This Lenten season, we're inviting, let me set this up real quick. We're inviting you to fast every week from a different thing. So last week it was media. And the reason we fast, I put this slide up last week, and I might put it up every week because it's just really good. Thomas Keating says, by deliberately upsetting our habits of eating, sleeping, and daily living through fasting vigils and simplifying our lifestyle, we create a space in which to change. And so that's what we're trying to do during this Lenten season, is we're trying to, each of us, in whatever way that seems to make the most sense to us, to set aside our daily habits. We're going to upset our daily habits because maybe we'll change. Maybe in not paying attention to the news for a week, something's changing in us that's good, and we can reorient ourselves. And so that's what we're doing during this Lenten season. So this morning, the invitation to fast is, what's your fast horse, and what do you give it up? How do you give up your fast horse for the week? How do you give up your rat race for this week? And so let me start with the control thing, just some ideas maybe. if you're an eight, maybe it's whatever that project that you're trying to get done, you're trying to lead, and you're so busy doing that thing, maybe if you just let go of it for a week. If you're nine, whatever that thing that you're avoiding because you're trying to control it, and it's going to get messy. If you go into that thing, it's going to get messy, and that's going to upset the calm that nines have. What if you let that in this week? If you're one, what if you say, sloppy is good enough for this week? I don't have to perfect it. I don't have to make things perfect. I can let go of that this week. Going around to the anxiety side, maybe if you're a five, maybe the choice this week is to not study more on something and to do something. If you're a six, maybe it's choosing a particular thing that you feel a lot of anxiety about and saying, I am going to stop this track going in my head. And I know I say that like it's really easy, because that feels easy to me, but I know it's not. And so you might have to come up with some kind of a replacement. Like every time I start to think about X, instead I'm going to listen to this song. It's funny because I'm giving you all opposite advice, right? So I'm saying to the sixes, like maybe you want to set aside an anxiety for the week. And I say to the sevens, maybe you should let one in. Maybe you should allow some anxiety to come in, even though it's uncomfortable and you don't like how it feels. Maybe you should let that in, because that's your pathway. Do you hear that? Do you hear me saying opposite things? But I think that's what the journey looks like. And then for those of us in the affection thing, I was thinking about like maybe twos choose this week to not help. That the world will keep turning even if you aren't the one to bring help this week. And so to choose a specific area, I am going to not serve at the Breakfast Club. Kidding. No, it's only Monday to Saturday. So they can't use that as an excuse not to serve at Breakfast Club or Genesis next week. So maybe there's a thing this week that you just say, you know what? I'm not going to do that, because I don't have to win somebody's affection. If you're a three like me, we do a lot of image management. Here's really raw. Facebook for me is, I'm just going to tell you all this, and I think, it's not my true self. It's a very cultivated image of myself where I want to be smart and funny and profound and enigmatic. The hours I've spent trying to decide just the right profile picture. Some of you maybe should spend more time. I'm kidding. Kidding! Kind of. So for me, I was really kind of like holding this space this morning, like, what is it for me this week? And I'm just going to keep the Facebook thing for me. Because for me, Facebook isn't an environment. It's a place where it turns very easily into me towards winning people's affection by impressing. And so it's good for my soul to stay off Facebook. And so I have to do some things on Facebook today that I'm going to do, and some work things come up that I have to get on, but mostly just stay off Facebook. And for fours, maybe the invitation this week is to embrace light and breezy, to not have to do the total, like, as I have a lot of four in me, and the temptation is I want to go deep all the time, and maybe the invitation is I don't have to do that. I can just go deep in my space here. That'll be enough. I hope that's enough, right? I hope that's enough fuel. So just like we did last week, we're just going to be quiet. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to be quiet. And then you can just name on the card what you're going to let go of. And please don't put your name. And then when we're done with the silence, Vicky's going to get up and transition us to the prayer of penitence and to communion. And so just for those of you that weren't here last week, here's what it's going to look like. Is when you come up to take communion, come all the way up, and you can pin your card to the wall, and then the communion servers are going to stand down in the corners. So is that all clear? So let's pray together. God, I'll start with my own confession. My own confession is that as a three, I spend a lot of time and energy getting on my fast horse of trying to impress people. I ride that horse pretty hard much of my life. And
And at times, that horse feels liberating and it feels like the pathway to freedom and happiness. But I know that at the end of the day, I recognize the very emptiness of that. And I know, I'm coming to know in a deeper place that in quietness and dependence, when I sit here with you, that's where I find my wholeness. That's where I find my strength. And so God, I know that my horse isn't everyone else's horse. We all have our own. And so help us in this moment. Holy Spirit, make us aware of what our horse is this week. Help us to name the truest thing that we can say, the truest act of sacrifice. And I pray that some of us in this room, we think of lists of things that we have wrong with us, and I pray that you would clear all that away right now and just show us the one thing, just the one thing, even if it's a baby step, just the one thing that we can do this week. And then help us to be brave. And when we fail, remind us that you followed us wherever we ran and set the chair down right there and said, just right here. In your name I pray. Amen.